You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Sergio de la Torre. He's an artist talking to me from San Francisco. Sergio, I want to thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you for the chance to do an interview. Thank you.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. Your practice is really kind of wide-ranging, and rather than getting into the whole scope of it, perhaps we can get to it by talking about what it is that you're currently producing or working on.
Yeah, well, right now I'm basically looking for funds to work on a new project. I'm looking at police brutality here in San Francisco. And like you said, I don't have a specific practice. I usually go from photography to video to text. And sometimes I do collaborations. Sometimes I work on my own. So right now, this new project is kind of like a large collaboration. I have a couple of collaborators that are in town. And I'm also a professor, so when I teach my classes, I usually bring my own research to my classroom in order to get like this kind of like a wider conversation about a topic that I'm looking into it. And in this case, it is police brutality. So you know, I like to hear what my students, in this case, I teach university undergrads. So I like to get their point of view on how they see violence, you know, in the cities that they live. So that's one project that I'm working on, and then I'm also continuing working on this ongoing project, looking at sanctuary cities in the United States. And I'm sure you know that there's around 280 cities in the United States that are considered sanctuaries. And this is something that happens in the 1980s when we get this massive amount of immigrants from Central America. This is during the Reagan era when the United States invaded Central America. So we saw this massive amount of immigrants coming to the States, and the government didn't know how to respond to that. So the Catholic Church, oddly, they were the ones that actually established this ordinance of the sanctuary city. And basically, if you are an immigrant that comes from you know, Latin America or some other countries into the States, you can actually, if you make it to these cities, the sanctuary cities, you know, you are somehow safe, meaning that the local police cannot cooperate with the federal police. So I started working on this project in 2009, and then I'm taking back the project because we're gonna see changes again in this ordinance. You know, the cities might stop being sanctuaries after, you know, President-elect Trump takes office tomorrow.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I know what a dark day to be having an interview. So these sanctuary cities, what I didn't know was that when immigrants come in there, and I assume you mean immigrants that don't have visas or are undocumented, sure, the sanctuary cities are places where they are safe, meaning they can't be deported or held to federal law on a particular,
right,
they cannot be visas. They can stay essentially.
Well, they cannot be detained, right, by a local police because they look like an immigrant, right? So if they are stopped by the police, you know, because of a traffic ticket or because they're you know, loitering or trash in the streets, you know, they cannot ask you for any legal papers. They can ask for an ID, but they cannot ask for a passport or a visa or a green card, right? And also they cannot call the ICE, the Immigration Customs Enforcement, to come in, you know, and see you, and identify you as an undocumented immigrant and potentially detain you and then deport you. So that's one aspect of the ordinance that is kind of like attractive to people that come from, you know, from out of town undocumented or from out of this country undocumented.
And so let's talk about the project about the sanctuary cities. How will that come to be? What will that be? Is that a film or a text or photographs? How will that come together?
This is the last phase of the project, so we are looking into one is a website that includes mostly information about what happens with immigration in the last, 25 years, because in San Francisco, the ordinance became effective in 1989. So we have, 25 years of history, things that have happened, with different laws and propositions, not only in San Francisco, but also in California. So the last part of the project is that website that is kind of like informative. It's kind of like a documentary online. It includes photographs and videos, interviews, testimonies, and a lot of information, a lot of data, how much money we invest on stopping undocumented immigration, remittances, how much money goes back from immigrants into Latin America, which is a lot of money. People that got killed, people that are arrested, who's making money out of this? So that's one aspect that we're looking at right now. And then the other one is we're trying to do projections onto buildings here in San Francisco. So we're looking at a couple of buildings that are kind of like symbolic in the city. And one of them is City Hall. So we are working with the local a company that actually does these massive projections around the world, and they have these amazing projectors and technology that if we get the money, we'll be able to use the technology almost for free. And so what we're projecting is basically quotes from testimonies from undocumented immigrants that have been detained and that are in prison right now or that already been deported back to Latin America.
And so I'd like to talk more about, actually the first project as well, but you said you're raising money right now. And this is, I think it's great that we're talking now, because especially on the eve of the inauguration where,
sure,
this seems enormously important work. This is obviously almost activist or certainly socially relevant or a social practice. You're raising these issues and educating the public. So you're looking for funds to do this, right?
Yeah.
Funding for this. And that's also, of course, an issue now in the last few days. The rumor that Trump is going to completely gut the NEA and the NEH.
Sure.
So how do you go about getting funding for something like that? And how much are you looking for?
Yeah. Well, there are all the different foundations that are private, basically, right? That really, whether it's Trump or Obama or Bush or Clinton, they don't really care. It's their money, they do whatever they want with it. So, I've been applying for grants for quite a while now, probably 20 some years. And I mostly use private funds. I don't really get federal funds for my projects. There's some money that I gotten from local commissions here in San Francisco that are government-based, but a lot of the money comes from private foundations.
Hmm. Well, that and, seems to be the way we're moving towards, right? I suppose you've been doing that for a few decades or more, but also that seems to be, at least in the United States, the most sustainable form of funding, because the government funding already is so low. I would imagine that's one of the few ways to get funding now and in the future.
Yeah, in my case, yes. I mostly money comes from private foundations. NEA, I think in 1995 they start giving money to individual artists. So the NEA gives money to foundations or to other institutions, galleries, nonprofits, cultural centers. But the money don't really, as far as I know, it doesn't go to the artists from the NEA. Right. Now, if you go to Guggenheim, if you go to Rockefeller, you go to Ford Foundation, the money goes to you, or part of the money goes to your project, right?
Right. Right. Now it's all, well, there could be, I suppose, fiscal sponsors to route the money to you, but right, most government agencies, it all goes to major organizations, not individuals anymore. I guess.
Yeah, large museums, large galleries, and it's great because then they can operate and you can show your work in there, but they don't commission artists, right? They basically go and look at projects that are already finished, and they show that. you know, there's not much commissioning happening from galleries and museums, as far as I'm concerned, or as far as my practice goes.
And so to talk about the other project, the Sanctuary Cities, and which sounds like it'll be ideally projections throughout San Francisco on buildings of text, and then there's the work you're doing currently that you mentioned you're getting feedback from students on about police brutality in San Francisco. Will that become a film, or is there also projection or installation elements of that?
Yeah, I have this class that I teach every year. It's called Artists as Citizen, and so what we mostly look at, you know, contemporary public art, look at 1950s to the present, and the idea is to, you know, help students understand what it is that citizens do, you know, to provide some sort of service or knowledge, you know, to help causes. So in this class, you know, every year we have one topic. And so for this year, I wanted to do police brutality because we've been in the news, right? It's kind of like doesn't stop. It's everywhere. You know, there's really no justice in arresting the police that are, you know, abusing their rights or their uniform, you know, killing people left and right. So in San Francisco in the last 2 years, we saw three killings of three Latino men by the police. The three of them were unarmed. You know the story. You know, it's kind of like Eric Garner, you know, it's like once again in San Francisco, but in this case, we're looking at Latinos, the three of them. What I like to start is a conversation with the city of San Francisco. And I'm proposing plaques where these people were killed. So it is a plaque that would say something about the person or something about what happened in that site. And it is, you know, a commemorative plaque that will have some sort of an event that would be official, will be city official, you know, government official. And I understand that this is nearly impossible to accomplish, which is fine because what matters, I think, is the conversation. So I'll be...
You mean impossible to accomplish in the sense that the city, the likelihood of the city giving you permission to put up a permanent plaque is very slim.
Yeah, correct, yeah. And to accept the fact that, yeah, somebody was killed here by the police, you know, that was unarmed, and, you know, it wasn't dangerous, it was just like, you know, standard procedure. So, you know, at the end, what comes out of this project is conversations, right? So what I will have at the end is going to be letters from the city, I hope, from the police department, you know, probably interviews with them. And so that's more or less what I'm thinking this project will take me to, and what I will accomplish will be like a set of letters, basically.
So with this current project, and especially in the political climate that seems that these kind of things could only get worse, what are you hearing from your students about police brutality? You know, it was interesting when I was talking to Greg Tate, cultural theorist, about African Americans, and he teaches a class and was talking also about police brutality, and he said, he was talking about racism as well, and he said that young students hesitated to actually talk about it. They didn't really want to talk about, racism and encounters with the police, that they were hesitant as opposed to how they were 10 years ago. What are you hearing from your students?
Yeah, well, I teach private university here in San Francisco, and so most of my students are white, and they don't see themselves in this equation, right? I mean, the police is not killing them, even though we know that they are killing also white people. But these students don't see themselves as you know, the victims. And they don't see themselves as the victimizers, right? Because they're not doing it, they say, right? So they get defensive. You know, we're not doing it. Even though I'm white, I'm not doing it. But it's not about that. And so my class will start this Monday, so I haven't taught this class yet on police brutality. I taught a class about racism before, and you get these responses, right? That, you know, just because I'm white, I think that I'm evil. But I don't care about that. You know, for me, it's good that they understand that there is such a thing as institutionalized racism. Mm. And to allow, you know, a police to go out and kill a person of color, you know, without going to prison, that's part of that system. It's part of that institution. Whether the police is racist or not doesn't really matter. You know, we have an institution that is allowing, that is training these police officers to do this. Mm. And then we have society, the media, you know, the news, that don't really care. So for me, that is important, that they understand that. Not that they are, you know, responsible or the victimizers.
Right. And do they understand it? Like, I mean, I know you're just beginning this class, but are they artists also? Do they understand that this is also part of the research you're doing for a project, and that and in the context of your work about, you know, immigration and labor and a variety of social issues that you've worked with in the past, is the class aware that this is part of your research that's meant in some ways, if I'm not overreaching here, to kind of share these issues with the world so that people who aren't the victims of these crimes understand the nature of what's going on? Is that something that the students, you think, will recognize? And are they artists?
Yeah, they're artists. This is the fine arts department. So yeah, they're artists, they're designers, they're architects, they are historians. So yeah, they do have a background in the arts. And it is hard to know what it is that they understand, right? Even your audience, when you work on a project in showing at a museum or a gallery, you know, it's hard to see, it's hard to know, you know, what it is that they're getting out of the project. Sometimes with students, because it's day to day, and you're with them for, you know, for a whole semester, sometimes like a whole year, you get deeper conversations, and some of them understand things that they didn't understand before. Some of them understand that, oh, you can make art about these. Right, or you can collaborate about these, and you know, that's, for me, that's what I'm looking for. You know, I don't know whether they're gonna come out clear and understand, you know, what it is that is going on in this country with the police, but you know, I think they are engaged. I get responses, you know, from the students. At the end, we have a project that, you know, that we finish in the class.
And the project at the end that you finish in the class collaboratively will be what in this case? Will it be the research as well as images or a video or a film? What is the end result of the project that you'll create?
Yeah, I think it'll be research based. I'm not sure what it is yet, because again, you know, I don't know whether they're gonna give me the place to actually install a plaque. So I don't know. I don't know what it's gonna be. Research, of course, you know, and I've done things with them before that we show in galleries the work as a collaboration. And again, you know, yes, photographs, you know, audio, text, you know, kind of stuff. I do follow that from like an installation.
And so this is, you know, work that seems, again, enormously important to me, especially in the climate that we're in. In the past, you've shown a number of your projects at different biennials and places around the world, and you were just talking about a conversation that sometimes you say, you know, it's about the conversation, of course, you know, in the class and outside the class, and you know, I see it as raising consciousness in a way too to these issues. But sometimes, as you're saying, the conversation can be somewhat muted in the gallery, and what are people seeing and what is happening? Is there an example of a project that you've done, whether it's in, you know, Istanbul or anywhere else around the world, in different festivals that you've been to, as well as biennials, where the conversation actually became active and something that seemed that people were engaged in a way that was new for them?
Yeah. In 2006, I finished this documentary it's an hour long documentary on factory works in Mexico. It's called Maquilapolis. And it's a film that he went around the world to several film festivals and also by Anderson galleries. And film festivals are very, you are very engaged with the audience. And the audience is engaged with you as a producer, director. So you have screening that is an hour long, and then you go for a Q&A. And that, for me, was very new and exciting because in the arts, that doesn't really happen that often. You know, if you go to a museum, you might have a lecture at a museum. And the show lasts for 3-4 months, right? And then one day you show up, and then you have a lecture conversation with the curator, and then the audience shows up, public is there. So, you know, they engage with you at that particular time. But in film, it's kind of like right there. You know, it happens to them right there. They watch the film, an hour later, they're talking to you about the project. So for me, that was incredibly new and exciting and direct. And I was dealing with, you know, factory workers in Mexico, so labor issues, you know, human rights, environmental issues, all these things that came into play, and gender issues, and you know, border issues. So during the conversations, the Q&As, they're kind of like people that were working in unions in different countries, you know, people that were factory workers themselves, you know, people that were looking into labor issues, lawyers. So it was completely, I didn't expect that to happen, to be honest with you. And so for me, that format is very successful. That you watch a movie an hour later, and then you have to talk to somebody about it.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And is that because of something cultural? You know, I'm just wondering why that doesn't happen more, why that surprised you, why that doesn't happen in the United States, because this is ideally what should come out of your work, right? More of these conversations where people are questioning things, where your students aren't, and I know they're not necessarily being defensive, and hopefully they won't be of, you know, this doesn't quite apply to me, but where it really generates a conversation. Is that something is it a reach to say that that's cultural, that that's harder to start in the United States, or does it depend on the project itself?
Yeah, it depends on the project itself, but it happens in the States as well. You know, film festivals in the States do the same. You know, they do have the film and they have a Q&A. You know, Tribeca Film Festival does that, SF Film Festival does that. Every film festival in the States, they do have that model. So if you go to a film festival, then you get exposed to the project and then the director. Sometimes the actors or the subjects of the documentary or fiction, whatever you're working on. So it's happening in the States. And also with film, when you go to, they take you to colleges and universities in this country, and they do the same format. They show the movie and they have dinner with students. So I think culturally we have it in this country, definitely.
Well, it's exciting that you're doing this work. And before I ask you the last question, as we're moving into a, you know, quite a different age in terms of, I mean, I hope not, but I mean, we are, right? Trump is going to be, is going to lead a very oppressive government, especially towards the arts and minorities. Do you see that as something that will kind of increase the exposure of what you're doing, the relevancy of what you're doing, the importance of all this? Because it seems to me, I've been thinking a lot and talking to different people about like what will happen in the next 4 years in terms of how artists react to that. And your position would seem clear, but is this kind of a, I mean, you know, forgive the kind of notion, but sort of like a golden age of kind of oppression and difficulty for minorities and everybody that will make these issues incredibly relevant and important. I know that's a terrible term to use, but you know, something where this is a kind of a dark age, really, right? Where some of these things will come to the forefront more than ever. Is that what you, do you see that at all? I mean, am I just projecting, or what do you think about what's coming in the next 4 years?
Well, hopefully
in terms of your work.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you're right. You know, when 2001, when the towers collapsed in New York, 9/11. The 2 or 3 years after that, you know, or 2003 or 2004, people really wanted to know a lot about the Arab world. And there were a lot of projects that were coming out of the Arab world, you know, it's like documentaries, art projects, you know, novels, fiction. And films, and you know, people wanted to consume that. So a lot of the funding went there. So between, you know, 02, 06, it was really hard to get funding to things that were not considered in the Arab world. So probably you're right, you know, it's like maybe now we have a wider platform for, you know, from where to speak about these issues, right, because of Trump and because of his cabinet. So that can definitely happen. I can tell you that, you know, I've been doing this for such a long time that for me, oh, there's no money for the arts. It's nothing new. And it's kind of like, yeah, duh, obviously, you know, it's like, we don't do it for money. We do it for some, you know, other reasons. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. But I don't think that the arts can be hurt more, to be honest with you.
Right, than they are already. You mean the arts in the United States can't be hurt more with a lack of funding and issues like that?
I mean, lack of funding, and also lack of an audience. You know, museums are becoming something else. You know, museums are becoming these like attraction centers, like entertainment centers. You know, these new museums that all these like architects, all these star architects are building these museums all over the world. They all look the same. They all have the same collection. They have the same cup of coffee. Now they have food. You know, so museums are in a different channel, definitely. More expensive, you know, more exclusive, you know. So people are not really going to museums. And we knew this a long time ago. This, again, it's nothing new. So some of us, you know, work outside in the museums and galleries and cultural institutions, you know, just to, you know, attract new audiences.
That makes sense. The idea of projections on buildings, as you were saying, and even the you know, the conversations generated by the memorial plaques that may or may not get installed is really about bringing in the non-art going public to these issues. It sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, I'm not romanticizing in the streets, and you know, that's what the real people are. It's just another platform, basically. You know, it's just another platform. I do things in museums. I do things in galleries. You know, but when I work inside a museum, I have a different approach. When I work in the streets, I have a different approach. When I work in film, I have a different approach. So, you know, I understand that there are different audiences. And then when
it's,
I teach,
it's wonderful.
You know, I'm sorry.
No. Go on. And when you teach, what? That's yet another audience.
Yeah, definitely. Sure, yeah. Because they're there, you know. They're there for you, in front of you for 3 hours, you know, one day or twice a week.
Well, what I like about what you're doing, which I also relate to, is that it's about, you know, conversations. This interview series, of course, is about conversations and understanding what artists are doing in all different realms. And it seems to me that your work ideally generates those same things, even with these plaques. That's just the letters you'll get back from the city, or the permission or lack of permission, is generates a conversation. And I think that's a very vital part of what it means to make art, right? How do we generate conversation and get feedback and exchange and learn from one another?
Yeah, that's the question that I have, and when I work on projects, I try to, you know, address that question. I always have an answer, but I always have the question.
So before we go, the last question I want to ask you is, which I've been asking everybody lately, is it doesn't have to relate to this particular work, or it can, but what are you reading lately? Is there a book or books you want to mention that you're looking at or reading?
Yeah, I got this book that I've been reading for a couple of months. It's called A Little Life by Hania Yanagihara. I believe she's a New York young artist, I mean writer. And it's about these four friends that live in New York. And I think it happens now in the 2000 era. So it's fiction. I'm reading that one. I would go back to this book by Claire Bishop. It's called Artificial Health. And it's a book about public art and social art practices. So, you know, I tend to go back to that book. It's very important in my in my pitching and also the way I approach our projects. And then I started reading this book about a couple of weeks ago by a Chilean writer that was based in Mexico City, Roberto Bolaño. And the name of the book is La Pista de Hielo, the ice skating ring. So I try to mix, you know, languages and genres when I read. And I always have a couple of books open that you know, travel with me or not in my bedside or in my table, my coffee table.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And Sergio, I want to thank you for talking with me today. I really enjoyed hearing about your work and certainly wish you the best of luck in getting all the funding that you need.
Well, thank you very much. I'll keep you posted.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.